Accession with 32526, Real 2.
What was the role of the ship?
Well, where she was deployed, she was deployed in 1941 in Ina, where she was occupied by a sizable fleet of Royal Navy and Royal Australian Navy ships, and participated in a search for the German ship Admiral Scheer. After the search was abandoned, she took up convoy duty before being sent to Basra after a pro-German revolt by Rashid al-Thalini started the Anglo-Iraqi War. The war was won by the end of May, after which the Enterprise was released back into convoy duty in the Indian Ocean. Now, we got there to join it about 2 weeks before she left to go back into the Indian Ocean and take part, being in convoy and escort duty.
So what was it like actually joining your first ship?
It was pretty grim, because, I mean, it's a completely different life sort of thing. It's not just the discipline, it's what all the other little bits and pieces that you've got to learn about the Navy and ship duties and all this, that sort of thing that you take for granted afterwards. It's just but it is a completely different life.
So what would be a normal day for you?
Well, if you're watch keeping, you've just got your watches to do sort of thing. If you're on day duties, you've just got a daily routine of normal shipboard life sort of thing.
What sort of time would you get up in?
Well, if you're doing watch keeping, in wartime in a big ship, you do what they call three watches. You have a red, white and blue watches. And you do 4 hours on and 4 hours off. So you've got your morning watches, you've got your midday watches, and you've got your night watches sort of thing. And you have what they call the dog watches, which is between 4 and 8. You do 4 to 6, 6 to 8. And by doing them, that rotates you, so you're not doing the same block of watches each time. It enables it to change out about 24 hours sort of thing.
So what does a watch comprise of? Are you
well, if you're down in the boiler room and then, or if you're down in the engine room, this terminal is different stuff, but it's still the 4 hours. You've got the afternoon watch, which is 12 to 4. Then you've got your first dog watch, which is 4 to 6. Second dog watch is 6 to 8. And then you've got your I've got time to remember all these now, but you've got then from 8 to 12. And then if you do the middle watch, which is 12 to 4, morning watch, which is 4 to 8, yeah, first watch, 8 to 12, and then afternoon watch, 12 to 4.
So it's quite a difficult routine to get
around,
to know where you were.
Yes, it is.
And when you weren't doing that, was it the time your own in the mess room?
Yeah, that's your time off when you're between watches sort of thing.
So did you each, the stokers have their own mess room?
And yes, they got all their own mess room. Seamen have got their own mess room, and plenty of officers have got their own mess room.
And did you sling your hammock in there?
We had a hammock, but it was over the normal crew. So there wasn't room to do all hammocks and that, and sometimes you slept on the table or on the seats at the side of the table sort of business. And you couldn't have a hammock, because only so. In peacetime, the crew is about 2/3 of what it is in wartime, because they've got to allow for what can happen and all that sort of business. But it's, once you get into the routine, it is routine, purely routine.
So did you cope with the heat all right?
Yeah. A lot couldn't cope with that heat, you know.
Very hot.
It gets you
down in the engine.
Yes. Especially up in the Persian Gulf, it was a shocker up there. There was quite a few went down with the sunstroke business and that, you know.
Did you have to have injections for tropical diseases?
Yeah, it was all that went with it sort of thing. Yeah, diseases and stuff like that you've got to have for what we call jabs for.
Did you have battle station alerts and routines to do?
Oh, yeah, there was always that part of training. You might have come off watch and suddenly get action stations go. In reality, you get action stations go. You might have just come off watch and that sort of thing. But you've got what they call off-watch duties as well. Like stokers would go down if they weren't on watch, and they'd be helping the seamen with ammunition and all that sort of thing, or fire watching, so in case there is any fires and when you're in action and all that sort of business, you know.
Did you have a set position on the boat that you had to go to at
yeah,
a battle
you've
session?
Yeah, you've got different, your own positions that are worked out for each one to go to and that, all that sort of business. Yeah, it all will cater for what you had to do.
Did you have good officers? Or?
Yeah, sure. Most of them were pretty, very good sort of thing, yeah. They really were, yeah.
So you were on the Enterprise, and then after a fortnight she went off from guard duty.
Yeah, and then we just was convoy.
Yes.
But we did a lot of other stuff, like I've got here where she did, because you're not aware of a lot of the stuff that you are being involved with. Like we were escorting troop ships to Singapore, Rangoon, Burma, and we joined the Eastern Fleet under Admiral Sir James Somerville, taking part in protection of trade for the next year. On the 6th of April 1942, together with HMS Paladin and HMS Panther, she picked up some of the 1,120 survivors of the cruisers HMS Cornwall and HMS Dorsetshire.
What can you remember of that incident?
Well, we didn't know a lot, so you're down below, and there's all stuff going on, but you're not aware of what's going on until you, for some reason, have to come up or you're coming off watch. And it was pretty grim picking up the survivors of Cornwall and HMS Devon, because they got sunk. We were pretty well separated from them, and they got sunk in the afternoon, and we didn't get to pick them up until the next day. So they were in a pretty bad mess, because when you get sunk in a ship, you've got all audio and debris and everything all around, and they were in a pretty bad shape sort of thing. They lost quite a few with the ship going down, but there was a lot of sort of wounded people aboard the boats.
Did they pick them up by liberty boat from the water?
No, we got them alongside and then got them lifted up then with, if it was like bad cases that were in stretchers and that sort of thing, and others so that we could climb up and get up and that. And it was not very nice to pick up some of them because they were in a shocking state, covered in old eyes, bad, and all that. And we had to find spaces to put them all in, see? So it's not a nice thing to go through, sort of thing. But you're only too pleased to be able to get them up. And it's amazing what you will do for them to help them and try and, make things a bit easier for them.
Supply them with some clothes and
all that had to be done, clean them all up. And because a lot went into the sick bay and all that sort of business. We had them in the passageways and like that sort of thing. Because there's quite a few, when you think of the, as it says here, there was 1,000. What do we get up? We cook up quite a thing. Yeah, 1,120 survivors. And there's a lot to get picked up because there was just us and two destroyers to have been able to get them.
So did you have to keep the survivors with you until you went to port next, or did you go off?
We went into Seychelles and did a lot, and then waited for other ships to come in, to take them, because some were very bad, indeed. So you needed to get them to a decent sort of hospital situation sort of thing.
Did you have much contact with them yourself?
Yeah, I did, actually, when you chatted to them and asked if you could do anything to help them and all that sort of thing. They're shipmates, even though you haven't known them, they're still shipmates.
So did they tell you what had happened to them?
A lot of them didn't realise what had happened. It happened so quickly, you see.
Was it a submarine or?
No, it was aircraft. They were attacked by aircraft. The Japanese had got about three aircraft active, were going in that area, and we had no aircraft to oppose them at all, at that particular stage, and they just couldn't do anything about it. We were lucky not to be involved ourselves, to get sunk.
Did your ship come under attack at any time?
Yeah, we got, some bombing done and that sort of thing, but nothing to what these two ships happened to get sort of thing. Mm. No, we were lucky in that stage because we were quite separated with two different convoys sort of thing. And it was only afterwards that we heard about it on her there.
So the convoy those their ship was on that sunk carried on, and
we never heard about all that. We didn't know what the result was in regards to the ships in the convoy, how many got through or anything like that. There's a lot you don't know, you don't get told, sort of thing. By the way, we didn't even know that the situation we were actually in, sort of thing, you know, and this is it, see.
So your ship, you were convoying ships to Singapore, did you say?
Singapore, yeah.
So this was obviously before the fall of Singapore?
Yes. Yes, but not long, because we ended up being taking the last convoy into Singapore, and we were only in there 24 hours, and my father was then out in Singapore, because that company I'm talking about did the Singapore Naval Base, and the chap that... took over from my father in that sort of position. Dad was asked to go back because he was taken very ill, and that's how he came to be asked to go back then and take over. That's how he happened to be there, sort of thing. So when we got there, and I asked if I could get to find out any information about him, sort of thing. And a chaplain did the. I went and saw him, and he said, "You'll get a." They're prepared to let you go aboard ashore, but we were next to an oiler, so I went ashore there and got in touch and asked around there, and I was very lucky to pick up with a chap that knew my father, and he was able to tell me, he got away about 10 days ago, sort of thing.
So, great relief for you.
Yeah, that was quite a relief, sort of thing, and he went home via Fremantle and through the Persian, through the Pacific. Found in where was it? Not San Francisco, another one up Canadian place. I can't think of it at the moment. But anyway, then he went across Canada out from Halifax and back home, sort of thing. So at least he got back through there. But and he told me when we eventually met up that the chap aboard the ship he was on. No dad, and he called him up and he said, you said your son was on the Enterprise, and he said, yeah, and he said, well, he's over there, and that's where we were taking the last convoy in, and they passed the sort of thing, so dad said, oh, jeez. So it was good, it worked out as it did, Frank, you know, yeah.
So when you went to Singapore, were you aware of how close the Japanese were?
Oh, yeah, we were the last. We went there not only just taking the last convoy, but also to pick up VIPs and bullion and bring back out, sort of thing. So we were lucky to get away, really, and get back to Colombo, because they bombed the Sunda Straits. It's the straits between the islands and that there. And they bombed us as we went out, and they also had dropped to mines there. So it was a pretty dodgy little period of time that was, getting out from there.
So did you go out by yourself or with a convoy?
No, not just on their own, it was just full speed ahead, sort of thing. Yeah, just on their own.
Did you see there were still a lot of civilians there that couldn't get out?
Oh, yeah. What was another thing that was, at the time, we were pleased about, because there was this line of cargo ship picking up a load of nurses and taking them away, sort of thing. We thought, well, that's something to be pleased about. At least they're getting away. And that was the group that got sunk, and where they got badly treated by the Japanese. And when it got sunk, they just shot them down on the beaches, like sort of thing like that. It was just quite a big story about that.
Yes,
actually,
I understand that they managed to get ashore and were shot coming ashore, weren't they?
Yeah, terrible business that was. Mm. Yeah. And that was a sad thing to hear about afterwards, you know, about that happening. But there you go, you just don't know what is happening half the time, you know, when you're doing that. Yep.
So from there, where did you go after leaving Singapore?
Well, then we went back to Colombo, and we picked up a group of Royal Marine Commandos that were going, and we had to take them into Rangoon because they had volunteered, they were commanded to go behind the Japanese lines, go on that the Irrawaddy, and go behind the Japanese lines to destroy installations and stuff like that, and all that business and that. There was 102 of them, great fellas, and it wasn't until after the war that my wife found a book about the Royal Marines, saying the Royal Marines was there. She bought it for me, and I'm going through the book, and I found the episode of that printed there, and could you find out more than exactly what happened to them? And evidently, they did all that had to be done, and there was about 43 got back eventually out of the 102. So, pretty grim. Very brave men, I think, to volunteer and do things like that. Yeah.
You landed them in Rangoon, and then they went from there.
Yeah, I had to get boats and go up to Irrawaddy, and so do what they could, because they lost, I think, 30. One night in a skirmish that they got into with the Japanese, and then they had to go, and they had to make all their way up to almost into China, and then come back round. And by that time, the 43 got back out, and I thought, oh geez, window. So it was a pretty grim, but it's just part of the war. What was happening in the war, like you say.
So did you get much opportunity when at the end of each convoy to go and have any shore leave?
Yes, you got shore leave. You got shore leave like after we got back from putting them ashore and getting back there. We had shore leave in Colombo. But Colombo was getting bombed at times too there, mm-hmm. in Ceylon, you know, and that business. But then we just carried on doing their normal duties until we got returned to England.
So when you were in Colombo on shore leave, did you get mixed up with the Americans there, or...?
Wasn't many Americans came into there. They went into Durban and places like that, and there was pretty heavy goings on there between the Australians and the Americans. Just didn't get on very well together. So it was all a good battle ashore in a lot of those places there. Yeah, but it never happened in Colombo in India.
Have you got any stories about shore leave that you'd like to share?
Well, some are good and some are bad, sort of thing, but some are quite good, you know. The best shore leaves I can remember and enjoying was later on in America itself, sort of thing. Because later on, when I picked up the second ship, we had to go into America to pick it up, and actually ended up picking it up in Chicago, and that was ship for dealing with submarines and sub-Jason, more or less, it was. Yeah.
So can you remember about what time you, or the year when you were in Colombo?
Colombo would have been in the 1942 mostly, and part of 1943, sort of, yeah. Colombo was quite a nice port to go into, it was nice, and the people there were nice, sort of thing.
So had your job in the stoker changed? Did you get any promotions? Or?
Well, I got promotions from like into first class and then into a leading stoker at the very end, sort of thing. Yeah.
So what changed in your job with your promotion? What duties changed?
Well, you're going up a grade all the time, sort of thing, so your duties are completely different, sort of thing, because you're in charge of people and that... you've got that to deal with, sort of thing. You feel responsible for that you're doing the right thing by them and looking after them and that sort of thing, what you can do.
Did you cope with that responsibility okay?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, sort of business. It was really good. I did well with it. And to the extent that one of the officers said to me that, because I'm jumping ahead now a bit, but would I think seriously about, you know, extending my service with them? Because you're known as a hostilities only mate, NATO, hostilities only mate. Which means as soon as the war is finished, you're finished, sort of thing.
Right, so I'll just take you back. So you're in Colombia, and then what happened? Where did you go then?
Well, then we the Enterprise went back to England. We got back to England, and I got long service leave, sort of thing, which you get for overseas service sort of business.
So you've been a long time, in effect, haven't you?
Yes. I actually got 6 weeks. So that was good.
Was your journey home fairly uneventful?
Yeah, pretty well, because you're doing it on your own, and so it's all fast, you know. Yeah. You go there, get there pretty quick. Sort of
How many would there be in the crew?
The crew then was, she carried a crew in peacetime, but you increase it, sort of thing, from about 700 to 1200, if I remember rightly. That's what it was.
Did you stop along the way and fill up with the local fresh produce and?
Yeah, we called in, it was pretty quick, because we called in to Mombasa, because in the Indian Ocean, Mombasa became the main naval port sort of thing, because it was bigger, and that was when they formed the East Indies Fleet sort of business, see. We could use Colombo, but it was only small, whereas Mombasa was quite a big port, so that's how we got away with it there, but yeah, I think the normal crew in the Enterprise was about 600, and you were close to over 1,000 if a wartime sort of business.
Quite a strain on the cooks and the catering services.
I was compliment. There's 572 officers enlisted men, but then Peter's all gone back there. But that would have been increased to, see, they say 500-600 here, you'd be looking at about anything up to 800-900, I should say, in wartime, because you've got to allow for what can happen, sort of thing, to the people you've got aboard, casualties and things like that.
So when you got back to the UK, where did you come into Liverpool again?
No, we came into the Clyde, and she paid off there to have a big refit, see, the Enterprise. And eventually she took part in the D-Day landings and all that sort of thing.
So you're sorry to see the back of her?
Anyway, you do. You get it becomes your home sort of thing, so, you know, you do. But we left there, and then went back to Plymouth.
And you had 6 weeks' leave?
I had 6 weeks' leave.
So what did you do with that?
Well, I had to contact my sister, because I didn't know the address for my mum and dad, because by then he'd come in, and that's when he decided to go for a pub. And he had a pub down in Kent. He got a pub down in Kent in a place called Paddlesworth, which was quite near fighter stations sort of thing. And then I didn't know that, and I had to contact my sister, and she told me where to go. Where they were, so I thought, it's quite a long journey down, but I did. I got the train down to London, then from London to Folkestone, because Paddlesworth is just is Hawkins is where the fighter group were. And by the time I got the last train down to Folkestone, got out the train at Folkestone, and I thought, where do I go now, sort of thing. Saw the chap on the I said, I don't suppose there's anything, buses or anything. And he said, oh, crikey, no. He said, there's a taxi. And he shouted out, just a minute, and he shouted out to this taxi, hang on. He said, can you take this chap to wherever he wants to go? And he said, all depends where he wants to go. And I said, it's a place called Paddlesworth. Dad's got a pub there. And he said, hang on. And he had two officers in the taxi already who happened to be pilots. And so she had to be up to them, so he spoke to them. They said, yeah, of course, get him up there, come on. I mean, and I went with them, because took them to their place. And when I got there, they said, where have you come from? I said, I've been out in the Pacific and Burma and that sort of thing. And they said, crikey, you've had it rough. And I'm looking at these two, there's two fighter pilots, and they're saying to me, you had it rough. I said, I don't think it's rough. But they were nice fellows, so that was good. And I said they invited them to the pub any time they wanted to, and they saw we've been there a few times already. So then they took me on to the dad's pub, because by then it was all dark and that, and God said, what am I going to do that? And luckily the taxi driver did know he'd been around in there now, so we just threw a few handfuls of something against the wall and woke dad up, and he came down and he said, what's up, what's the trouble, what's the trouble? And the taxi driver said, I've got a surprise for you. He said, is your son here? Like that. Because dad was all over the middle of that. Because I wouldn't have seen him for 4 years. It would have been 4 years since I last saw him. Yeah.
Did you get a chance to write home when you were on the ship, or was it just that it's very difficult to get?
Yes, you could. You could write home, but because I couldn't tell you can't.
No.
That's the hard bit about it. You write home and you let them know that you're okay, but you can't tell them anything. You can't tell them where you are or what you're doing. You just can't. And that's it.
But so they had no idea you were coming to?
No, you can't just hold all that information, see? Because then it was hard to write to. I didn't know from their address or anything like that. All this had happened on our way back, sort of thing, and going to the pub.
So what did you think of England after all that time?
Well, I thought it was pretty grim, it was, you know, sort of thing. But by then, they were starting to get things ready for the D-Day business and that, because you didn't know anything, but that's what was going on. Business, you know, you thought, oh, crikey. But I've got to tell you this, when I arrived there, Dad put all the lights on, and he had two pianos, one at each by the private bar and the other bar, as you put your pennies in, pianola sort of. He had them going full blast, but I think, because Mum said, what's going on, what's going on? He says, your son's back here. So we had a little party then. I thought the police were going to get here in a minute. But the taxi driver thought it was good. Yeah. That was another little thing. It was joyful sort of thing. Yeah, I had a good leave there. But it was, you realise straight away, gosh, how hard it is, what with the rationing and stuff like that. Oh, gosh, shocking.
Still getting raids, air raids and things.
Yeah, it was. They did that down there. They got quite a lot. And because they were flying across from France too. They were flying, yeah. You know, sending stuff.
Big Bertha.
Yeah, Big Bertha, yeah. And the other thing too, it's funny just to look to, just to go adrift a minute, is we've been down to the Dover Castle with all the tunnels and that. Now, no one knew anything about that. And to know that Dover Castle didn't get hit or anything like that, and they fired over the top of it. I was going down there thinking, gosh, I never, then it's just something you never knew.
Hellfire Corner.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You imagine that, what could have been done to that? But no one knew. Anyway, I digress there. That was. So, anyway, I had my leave, and then I had to report back down to Plymouth, and that's when I went to what's happening now, sort of thing. And, well, we just waited and waited, that sort of business.
So you were in a shore establishment for a while, were you?
Yeah. At Plymouth, you go and waiting in for what they're going to do with you, sort of thing. And I thought, oh, geez, no. I walked along and I saw this volunteers needed. And I thought, well, what's that? And it was for the torpedo boats that operated in the channel and all that sort of thing. I thought, well, Mum and Dad are down there. I thought I'll be stationed at Dover and everything like that. So I'll put my name down to get into that. But I never heard a thing. When I heard what it was like on torpedo boats, I thought, oh, gosh. I was lucky there.
Yes, lucky.
So I waited, and the next thing I got this draft into America to pick up this other little ship, the Killam, HMS Killam. And that was laid down in 1943, and it was only a small boat, but it was purely for escorting convoys, but also as a sub chaser, to sink subs down.
So how did you get over to America?
On a convoy? That was on a convoy.
And were you worried about the U-boat?